But first, singer-songwriter Nika Rosa Danilova. Nika has been recording and performing as Zola Jesus for over 10 years. She's a classically trained opera singer. When you hear, you can tell. Nika grew up in rural North Central Wisconsin. She joined us to talk about the struggle to survive as a musician during the pandemic, her frustration with streaming services, and how the woodlands of Merrill, Wisconsin influence her music.
It's very grounding. Because I think that I absorb a lot of influence from the outside and from my environment, I like to be in neutral environments that are raw. And being in the woods definitely just feeds my soul. It makes me feel sort of like clean of energy because there's nobody around. That helps my creative process.
Mm-hmm. Does it, the kind of songs you write now that you're back in Merrill, are they different from the songs you were writing when you were living in Los Angeles and when you were living in Puget Sound?
Definitely. Especially when I was living in LA, I was younger too, so that could also count for something. But being immersed, like living in West Hollywood and, you know, I'd have a window open and Rihanna would be playing or, you know, like Gaga back then, you know, it would just be a bunch of pop music and just the whole Hollywood world was very ungrounded in a way. And I felt very unmoored in it. And, you know, it was hard to hear my own voice amidst kind of all of culture screaming at once in a place like Los Angeles. And then when I moved to Seattle, I was still searching for what I really wanted to say artistically. And so it's been a process of really trying to discover the core of my creative pulse and to honor that. That's helpful for me.
That's great to hear. How does your training in opera inform your music?
I'm a bit of a perfectionist and I like a bit of drama as well. I didn't think that opera really influenced me until I really started realizing that it does. I also like singing very loudly, you know, I like projecting my voice. And so my songs end up being very, you know, forceful or powerful in that way because that's just how I like to sing.
Mm-hmm. I can really hear your opera training in the song Exhumed, which is from your 2017 album, Okovie. The arrangement, your vocals, and the production strikes me as being very operatic and very epic. What inspired this song?
I was feeling very angry at the time and wanted to create a song that I felt like could really distill my emotional headspace and just feeling like I wanted to take the power back because I was feeling so powerless at that time. That aggression and just intensity and ferocity and then also just being able to really like, you know, howl.
Why were you feeling so powerless at this particular time?
I kind of been gone through the ringer in terms of trying to like figure out if I wanted to participate in like the mainstream world and then trying to and then kind of failing at it and not feeling like I belonged there but then not knowing where I belonged. And it was during a very transitional period of my life when I was feeling sort of lost.
Mm-hmm. You said that you don't think it's worth doing something that's already been done, so that you're trying to do something totally novel within the parameters of it being accessible so people won't dismiss it right away. This sounds easier said than done to me. How do you do that?
Yeah, that was maybe I said that in my a more youthful moment because that's what I was intending to do, but now I recognize that all music is born out of something before it. The key for me is when I say something novel, it's more about like finding my true voice, finding what I can provide to the public that is unique and individual in my own way and deliver that in a way that feels, you know, idiosyncratic.
Yeah. You released a live album in May, and that was around the time that most music events had shut down, and they mostly still are shut down because of the pandemic. When you listen to those performances now, what do you feel?
Oh, a lot of grief and a lot of sadness because I miss it. I didn't realize, and I think a lot of musicians didn't realize how much touring and performing nourished their souls. They didn't realize it as much as once it was gone. We just want to say you, pull you from those dark nights. We just want to show you there's more to life. It's like taking off half of my body of what, you know, what counted as being a musician, what it meant to be a musician, and how you survive from it.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, but that makes total sense. Before the pandemic, how important was touring and performing to your livelihood compared to, say, record sales or streams?
Paramount. It was the it's the most important, and it's the most finite thing you can do. You know, you can get on the road. If you can just get in a van and get on the road, you can survive. You can find a way to survive. Without that, you either have to be hopeful that someone will put your music in movies or TV shows, or that people stream it enough that you can actually pay your bills, which is already very hard, or that people buy enough records or merch, which is also very hard because no one really buys records anymore, and streaming barely make any money streaming. And so touring is really the sure way to make it as a professional musician. So without that, we're all pretty pretty driftless.
Yeah. You recorded this great cover version of a Black Sabbath song called Changes this year. What was it about this song that inspired you to record your own version of it?
For some reason, I'd never heard it until recently, until last year. And I heard it for the first time, and I love a simple pop song, especially when it's done by people that don't really know how to handle it. Which is why this is such a beautiful, beautiful song. Yeah, I was going through an incredibly, incredibly transformational period of my life, a lot of upheaval, and I was going through changes. And when I heard this song, it just, like any good song, it just echoes back what you feel like you're going through. I just felt the need to play it, so I started playing it live, and I just love singing it. It just feels so good. I love the song. And then my label, Sacred Bones, was doing a Black Sabbath covers album. So they asked me if I would record it, and I said, of course. I'm going through changes.
I'm going through changes. You've said that you want there to be a way for musicians to connect more directly with an audience, not through big streaming services. And you've recently started a Patreon where you've said you will release a Patreon-exclusive record when you reach a certain level of support. How is that going?
Good. I mean, the Patreon, I'm surviving off of it, so I'm extremely grateful for it, and it's one of the most important things in my life right now because of that. I think that a lot of musicians and music fans are still trying to navigate this world of patronage because we've been sort of stuck in this model, this transactional capitalist model for so long that it's going to be hard to reroute our brains to think that this is okay and we're not just begging for money. But I've just found it completely deepen my connection to my work and my fans and what I do. It totally changed my entire mindset. And I've been sort of evangelizing that to other musicians and going, look, it doesn't have to be this way. Like, you don't have to feel like your soul is being sucked out just to sell back to other people. Like, you know, this patronage model just feels so much more like a community than anything else has ever felt in my experience being a musician.
I'm curious about your ideal vision of the relationship between musicians and their audiences. How should it work? And are there ways that we haven't discovered, ways that we can use to get there?
It will differ from musician to musician because, you know, we all do this for different reasons and we're all comfortable with different levels of connection and contact. But there are so many better models for music consumption and support and the industry at large that just aren't even being considered because it's everything is so interwoven into this capitalist corporatized framework of major labels. You know, I'm on a label currently, Sacred Bones, which is an independent label, and they're I'm just incredibly loyal to them because they're like family to me. Not everyone's as lucky, but you also don't need a label anymore. Like, things are very different and can be, you can enter into this world in a very different way, but we just need to find and champion those ways and accept them as being, you know, just as good. You know, you can find success and you can find your people through other ways than just like being on a Spotify playlist or, you know, getting on an ad or something, or it's like, you know, being signed by a major label. Like, those things are really narrow, and they're narrowing even more because major labels are not willing to take risks on true creative types. You know, they just kind of want to fulfill roles that they know will sell records and they know will have fan bases.
Mm-hmm. You started the Patreon page as a way of fostering a more direct connection between yourself and your audience, and that's working out. And you talked a bit about how the current economic model is broken. Is there anything more about the current economic model that you like to say that you haven't said yet?
I think it's important to talk about the problem with streaming, because streaming is an incredibly convenient way to access all the music in the world at once. And that's an incredible technological advancement. But it is coming at the price of those very artists' survival, because we only get like half of a cent for each stream. It's not a sustainable model for independent or otherwise fringe artists. And so we kind of got shoehorned or wedged into this new model. People stopped buying records, stopped buying CDs. They thought if they just pay $10 a month to Spotify, then that's enough, and they're doing their part. Maybe if you're getting streamed millions of times a month, or, you know, you're a pop star, you're making tons of money. But for those that really survived off of physical album sales, which have now been utterly depleted, it wasn't replaced with anything. You know, it was just like we just lost that income, and then now we need to find out ways to sell ourselves outside of our music. Because that was the thing. You made a record and then you sold it to people. And that's how you paid for it. So then you can't invest in music anymore, because then you can't pay for it. No one's paying for it. So then the quality of music is becoming compromised. And so are the quality of ideas are being compromised, because people don't want to take chances on things that they can't sell. And if you can't survive off of it, you don't want to take a chance on it. So this is just has this huge domino effect, which I could talk about for weeks on end, because it's so implicit in the downfall of the music industry. And I don't think things will really heal or repair itself until we fix the problem with streaming.
Mm-hmm. You're someone who has already established a name and an audience in the indie rock world. Do you think there's an alternative way that new artists could do that? Or do they still have to rely on the old broken model?
I think these days people are relying on TikTok, and, you know, even I've been approached of being like, hey, you should get a TikTok. You should, like, you know, get your music so you become like viral on TikTok. And so I think a lot of people are just banking on becoming viral in one way or another, which is also really depressing, because then you're just banking on having this one novel spark of a moment and then knowing it's going to last. It's like trying to become a one-hit wonder for a living. No one can become a one-hit wonder for a living. You become a one-hit wonder for one hit, and then you've got to go on and do something else. It's very hard to pivot that to anything. I don't feel like there are enough communities built in supporting artists to have long careers, like David Bowie or Kate Bush or, you know, anybody. anybody great, because there's this feeling of, oh, if the only way that I can like make it is like having a viral hit or doing something super crazy and getting noticed. And it's just such a strange time for new musicians, which is why I feel really, I don't feel responsible, but I feel like I'm responsible to stand up and help them, because, you know, I feel guilty that I got a lucky shot at a good time. And, you know, I've been able to work really hard, but these people, I want to make sure that we can still continue to have new great artists making brave music and art in the world.
I'm curious about what it's been like for you trying to write and record music during the pandemic. Your music typically takes on dark themes, and these have been really dark times. Has anything about the experience of the last year informed your writing?
Honestly, it was horrible for me. Like, I've been enduring a lot of creative blocks, mostly because I think I write music a lot envisioning performing it, envisioning giving it to people, envisioning the tangible relationship that the music will have with the world. And I just don't see where it will belong right now. And the world is dark, which in some ways is creatively inspiring because great work comes from destruction. But at the same time, if there's not enough of a vision of the future of it rebuilding and it being better and being able to get back on those stages, it's hard for me to feel motivated to do anything. Also, the energy of just surviving physically, financially, emotionally, trying not to get people sick, the election, everything has just been so overwhelming, and it's just been crushing every ounce of any sort of creative energy that I would have. So that's also a huge issue.
Yeah, well, I hope things change soon for you and for everyone else. Nika Rosa Danilova, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Nika Rosa Danilova, better known as Zola Jesus, is a singer-songwriter who lives in northern Wisconsin. You can find out more about Nika at WPR.org/beta.
He was making some comments on a movie contract early in his career in the 1960s, and he said, I must have total, final, complete, annihilating control over the picture.
Coming up, we talk about the life and career of one of cinema's finest filmmakers, Stanley Kubrick. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.